Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcast.
Yes. This week, we will be discussing... Victorian postmortem photography.
Oh, thank God we will!
Just in time for Thanksgiving.
You know what? I can't think of a better time.
So what is Victorian postmortem photography?
Oh, can I answer?
Well, sure.
I'll let you say.
No, go for it.
This one I know. It is pictures you take of people after they are dead, the end. It's right there in the title, honestly.
In the 19th century.
Well, yes. In the 19th century. That is an important part of it. Well, specifically, this was used because, you know, people died early very often, and photography had just become easy. It let you have a memento of the recently deceased.
The end.
Well, I think the context is important.
Sources for this episode include...
It wasn't just willy-nilly like, I want to have a picture of a dead body for reasons.
Listen, I can think of no thought more Victorian.
Yes, but, you know... Anyway, tell me all about it.
You have probably seen at least one of these photos while scrolling through Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, etc.
Oh, I've seen more than one.
Or perhaps you've read an article with an accompanying photo gallery on BuzzFeed, Mental Floss, IO9, etc.
With a complimentary 50% of them aren't what they say they are.
Now, spoilers. Black and white, sometimes sepia-toned photographs of people in 19th century garb. Stiff poses propped up on furniture, sticks, or other people. Some infants and children in reclining poses on beds or sofas. Slack jaws and vacant eyes. And the caption explains that the photo makes you feel uneasy because one or more of the people in it are dead!
Whoa!
Gross!
We gotta get out of here, Scoob!
At the time the photograph was taken.
Yes.
Obviously, they're all dead by now because it's been like 200 years.
You know what? Yeah, any way you slice it, they died. Oh, God. Every photo from the Victorian era is of a dead person.
Every photograph will eventually be a photograph of a dead person.
Oh.
We are all future ghosts.
Ooh.
Happy Thanksgiving!
Listen, it's a shit holiday and I want to go back to Halloween. Although I do get 2 days off for this one, so I can't complain too much.
We all have dreams. Why are there so many photographs of Victorian corpse?
Because the people died a lot. A. B. There aren't.
The end.
So launch my guesses.
Fact. People die.
Whoa.
This happened a lot throughout history, especially in the Victorian era.
Many people consider death to be omnipresent. Feels like a Ken Burns statement.
In the Victorian era, we had a population boom. More alive people means more future dead people.
All right. Yeah, thinking of the future.
We also had industrialization minus workplace safety.
Oh, wait. We're going to level out that population boom right quick.
We also had processed food minus the FDA.
Oh, boy. You know what? All these extra people, I'm just going to say get rid of them.
No vaccines.
Get rid of them. Dump them. I'm tired of it. It's too many.
Arsenic wallpaper and mercury medication.
Well, this is egregious now, Victorians.
Why breathe oxygen when you can breathe acid fog?
Yeah, exactly. I've been saying.
Thoughts refusing to dress appropriately for sleigh weather.
Well, that'll get them every time. Being young, gay, and thoughtless.
See our Frozen Charlotte episode, won't you? Thank you. And sexy, sexy tuberculosis. But what else happened in the 19th century?
Well, after all of that, nothing good, I'm guessing.
The invention of photography!
No, I'm gonna call that a neutral.
1839.
Cue the Ken Burns music.
Louis Daguerre develops daguerreotype process.
Oh, it's not daguerreotype?
No, it's not daguerreotype. Fuck off, France. According to Wikipedia, this is the first commercially viable photographic process.
Oh, okay, so it did exist scientifically, but you couldn't.
Yeah, no, we had the
camera fast enough.
We had the camera obscura for like a while.
Okay.
But this is something new. Ooh. Something permanent.
Something saleable from the sound of it.
Capture your loved one's image for eternity in mere minutes.
No, thank you.
Way faster and cheaper than sitting for a portrait painting.
That's true.
Photo studios spring up all over America and the UK. Better and faster amateur models for home use are developed throughout the 19th century.
God, could you imagine I'm pictured like a 19th century dandy? Just, I'm going to snap a picture. Oh,
Well, in 1839, that would have taken about a minute and a half with the daguerreotype process.
Listen.
By the 1850s, they were down to 3 to 8 seconds.
You know, that's much faster than I thought it would develop.
But
get it? That's a photo joke.
But still not quite as fast as today's near-instant Instagram.
Well, 8 seconds is actually, if you like count it out, rather a long time.
That's a full respiratory process.
Yeah, it is.
The end.
In 16 seconds, I'll be dead.
Wait, no. But the middle class exists now and can afford photos. Huzzah.
No good. Just what I wanted.
But why photograph a corpse?
Well, because you're not going to be able to remember them otherwise. Duh.
Wow.
What?
You have a dim view of the human oral tradition and its ability to keep alive the memory of its ancestors.
Lame, stupid... Oh my god, uninspired. Jeez. Over it. I'm kidding, that's a joke.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I know Olivia's like probably listening to this and like heard me say like, fuck the oral tradition. And it like got on a bus. And in about 10 minutes is gonna come whack me in the mouth. This is jokes, people. These are jokes.
While photo is cheaper than painting, early photo is still money dollars.
Well, yeah.
Cheaper, yet not quite cheap. Until like the mid-19th century.
Well, yeah, it's the middle class never means what you think it means.
And the photos are not the 24/7 selfies of today.
I should hope not.
A photo is a special occasion.
Yeah, for, like, being dead.
It might not occur to a family to photograph their relative for remembrance until the subject is dead and remembrance is all they have.
Well, according to you, the oral tradition's just fine for that, so why are we even bothering?
The end. Also, as mentioned earlier, early photographs have a much longer exposure time.
Mm-hmm.
The subject must sit perfectly still, otherwise the photo will be blurry.
There's one thing I know about corpses.
You know who's really good at sitting perfectly still for minutes at a time?
I think it might be corpses.
Corpses! Corpses are great at
they
that.
They excel.
Except when they blow up full of gas and then turn themselves over and scream.
Yeah, sure, buddy.
How to photograph a corpse.
Point and shoot, baby. Point and shoot. And then run before the coroner comes back.
Dino.
How do I do it? I want to do it. I'm going to do it. How?
I'm so glad you asked. Photographer Charlie E. Orr.
Yeah?
Yes, his real ass name.
Okay, all right.
Charlie, middle initial E, last name Orr.
You know, I get the feeling he was sort of a depressed type.
Yeah?
Mm.
Stubborn as an ass, they said.
Mm.
Writing into the January 1873 issue of the Philadelphia Photographer magazine, said, and I quote, to afford assistance to some photographer of less experience to whom it might befall the unpleasant duty to take a picture of a corpse.
Now, well, I think it's editorializing a little bit, but...
Place the body on a lounge or sofa, have the friends dress the head and shoulders as near as in life as possible... Then politely request them to leave the room to you and your aides, that you may not feel the embarrassment incumbent should they witness some little mishap liable to befall the occasion.
So what, naked as a jaybird from the shoulders down?
D?
Yes?
I understand this is an audio format, but let me reassure the listener that you are always in at least three layers.
Yeah, I know, but it said dress the, like, head and neck and shoulders.
Yeah.
As if alive.
Yeah.
So the rest could just, like, let it all hang out, baby. And got nobody to impress.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Ooh, my boy's lounging in them linen drawers.
If the room be in the northeast or northwest corner of the house, you can almost always have a window at the right and left of a corner. Granting the case to be such, roll the lounge or sofa containing the body as near into the corner as possible. Raise it to a sitting position, and bolster firmly, using for a background a drab shawl or some material suited to the position, circumstance, etc.
I see, yeah.
Put the body in the corner.
Nobody puts body in the corner.
Blair Witch style.
Making some wild assumptions about how my windows are set up. Thank you.
I think if you are the kind of family that can afford to hire a portrait photographer for your recently deceased relative, you're probably the kind of family who could afford a front parlor or at the very least a morning room, which will, of course, be facing a sunny position.
Sure, of course.
Eeyore continues.
Thanks for noticing my corpse.
Place your camera in front of the body at the foot of the lounge, get your plate ready, and then comes the most important part of the operation, opening the eyes.
Ugh.
This you can effect handily by using the handle of a teaspoon.
Can you?
Put the lower lids down, they will stay. But the upper lids must be pushed far enough up so that they will stay open to about the natural width. Turn the eyeball round to its proper place, and you have the face nearly as natural as life. Proper retouching should remove the blank expression and stare of the eyes.
No, it won't. Spoiler alert, my guy.
According to the book Secure the Shadow, Death and Photography in America by anthropologist Jay Ruby, there are three categories of post-mortem photography between 1840 and 1880. 1. Posed as a sleeping in a better crib. 2. Upright with eyes open or closed yet not casual.
So I love the way that's phrased.
3. Mourning, surrounded by grieving family in obviously funereal settings such as deathbed or cemetery.
Okay. By the time they get to the cemetery, they're usually under, right?
Well, if you're, like, at the graveside and the hole is dug, but the coffin is still above ground and perhaps open.
Yeah, okay, yeah, all right.
Author Chris Woodyard, writing for HauntedOhioBooks.com, has a delightful historical anecdote regarding a photographer. Called to take a photo of a dead coachman whose widow insisted he be photographed on the box. From the July 18th, 1885 edition of the Topeka Daily Capital. So we carried him out to the stable, tied him on the box in full livery, with the lines and whip in his hands, and photographed him.
Charming.
Meanwhile,
the horse took off?
In the Photographic Times and American Photographer, volume 12, 1882, an Irish family living in the southern part of the city called on me about 2 years ago to take a picture of their dead son, a young man with his high hat on. It was necessary to take the stiffened corpse out of the icebox and prop him up against the wall.
Seems like.
The effect was ghastly, but the family were delighted and thought the hat lent a lifelike effect.
Listen, nothing's gonna make that dead boy look jauntier than a little hat.
Now here's the thing. That's a great story, but considering the time and place, it also could just be an anti-Irish racist joke, but who knows?
Yeah, well, now that you say that, it does seem more likely than not likely at all.
I mean, you'd know.
I'm gonna kill you, and incidentally, you'll become a corpse.
Will you then photograph me?
Yes.
Okay.
To prove that I had done it.
Now, are you going to be hanging that photo up as a warning to others who might make cracks about your ancestry?
Yes, absolutely.
Duly noted. Now that covers portrait photography. But what about forensic photography?
What about it? What about it?
Meet Dr. Nicholas Minovici.
Hello.
He is about to blow everyone's minds when it comes to photographing unclaimed corpses for identification.
Well, does he do it at all?
As reported in Physician and Surgeon, a Professional Medical Journal, volume 28, 1906.
I didn't fuck around with the titles back then.
No. He substitutes artificial eyes and gives a natural appearance to the lids by means of lead foil, or by pinning them to the eyeball with small pins.
Wait.
The jaws are drawn together with threads, and the face drawn to a natural expression by means of pins, evacuating accumulations of gas by means of incisions in the scalp or mouth.
Oh, I thought I'd say pins again.
He gives photographs of the various steps in photographing the dead, and states that he was able in one case to fully establish the identity by means of the photograph, the body having been in the water for 6 weeks.
Yeah, you know what, I don't think he actually made it look supernatural, but okay.
But that's not all!
Yeah?
Dr. Minovici also developed special hinged tables so he could photograph corpses standing up!
Now those I've heard about, yeah.
And I do mean table, because it's basically a dissecting slab with a footrest and belts for head, arms, waist, and legs.
Natural, just natural things, yeah.
Enough belts to outfit a Final Fantasy character.
Nice.
The table is big and heavy and industrial and most importantly, very obvious. More on that later.
Okay.
Now that you've learned all about Victorian postmodern photography, you want to collect them all.
Gotta catch them all. Most of those are kids. Catch them all.
Not so fast. There are two major problems.
Yeah?
One. Expensive.
Debatable.
Genuine Victorian post-mortem photographs start at $75 and skyrocket into the hundreds.
Yeah.
Two, fraud.
Yeah, nah, that's the one I'd be more concerned about.
That's right, this is an antiques fraud episode.
Oh, it snuck up on us.
Woo! Well, it didn't snuck up on anyone listening because antiques fraud isn't in the title, but you know.
Well, you didn't, yeah, but you didn't say like, you don't read the title out to me before we talk about it.
There are so many misidentified so-called post-mortem pics out there. And that's assuming the seller isn't just plain lying.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a list of sites who have posted listicles slash articles slash galleries of alive people misidentified as postmortem.
I see.
Wikipedia. Viral Nova.
Wikipedia!
IO9. BuzzFeed. Mental Floss. Cracked. Science Blogs, Listverse, Dose.com, 9gag, LiveLeak, Wimp, Mdala, Daily Mail, Huffington Post, San Francisco Globe, ABC News, and the BBC.
Yeah, I couldn't help but notice that some of those aren't exactly just fly-by-night internet ad generators. 9gag, I expected. ABC, I'm a little more surprised about.
Something-something yellow journalism. Supposed tells of postmortem photography include metal posing stands, leaning on furniture, braced against limbs or other people, blank or strange-looking eyes, a vacant or stiff expression, a stiff posture, a lack of blurring, or a hidden mother, wherein the figure holding a child is draped in a cloth. Mm-hmm. These tells apply to most 19th century photographs.
This is a hidden mothers were a very real thing, but everyone was alive.
And some of these tells even prove the subjects are very much alive.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Number one, bracing against posing stands, furniture, or other people.
You know, people do that now, I'll just say.
Do you remember Dr. Minovici's corpse table from like 3 pages ago?
Yeah.
His enormous, obvious, industrial corpse table.
Yes. Yeah, it's a table.
If a supposed corpse's posing stand is anything less than a massive slab behind them and belts around their head, waist, and limbs, congrats, they're alive.
Yeah.
Posing stands did actually exist. They were for the living.
Well, yeah, because it was really hard to hold a pose, so you had to have something to rest on.
Exactly, because long exposure times make it very easy for a living subject to blur an image through small movement. Even 3 seconds is a bit of a stretch to hold perfectly motionless.
Yeah.
Enter the posing stand, a discreet metal frame designed to help a living subject keep still and hold a pose for a portrait. These stands have been described as akin to mic stands. They weigh about 20 to 25 pounds, and they are not counterbalanced.
You're only allowed to use one if your name is Michael. It's a mic stand.
I'm leaving the podcast.
Aw, come on. It was fun. You can fucking, you make, you know what? I'm leaving the podcast.
I can't quit. You fired me.
I can't quit. You fired me.
A posing stand cannot support a corpse.
No, they're very flimsy. Well, not flimsy per se, but they can't. You do need to be supporting yourself in part.
Yes.
Which a corpse famously is incapable of doing. Go watch Weekend at Bernie's.
I mean, you know. As for leaning on furniture and or friends, as Dee pointed out, people do that now.
Imagine if every human being leaning on a friend in like a club, you're like, oh, they're dead. They died and they're dead now.
Dr. Minovici had to make human pincushions to get his deceased subjects to look alive. Someone lying on a couch with their head propped up on their hand looking directly into the camera, they're alive. The only example of a corpse standing up on their own is the possibly just a racist Irish joke example of a young man's corpse propped against a wall, which required said corpse to be frozen solid in an icebox first. And I can guarantee the result appeared neither casual nor lifelike.
Yeah, probably not.
Teal Deer, just because someone in a photo is braced against something doesn't mean they're dead. Alive humans enjoy physical contact with alive humans and often seek to preserve such moments through photography.
I don't know, I'd rather just believe they're all dead.
Inside, maybe. Point the second. Stiff posture / expression and lack of blur.
People do that now. If I can lean on an old standard.
And we're all dead.
Yeah. Dude, that kid you saw, like, when your nephew came and gave you their like, school photo, dead.
Damn.
Totally dead.
That's deep, bro.
I know.
Long exposures do increase the risk of blur. However, a clear image is still possible if the subject makes an effort to remain still.
You mean an effort that might result in a stiff posture?
Holding stiff pose means you will look like you're holding yourself unnaturally still. Because you are holding yourself unnaturally still to prevent blurring, which is why the image isn't blurred. Because you are making a conscious physical effort as an alive human to be still.
I don't know, you posed too well for that photograph. Are you sure you're not dead?
The aforementioned posing stance helped out with this. You know what else helps kids keep still?
Being held.
Number 3, the hidden mother technique.
They're not dead. I can't stress this enough.
This is the term for when a baby or child is photographed while held by an adult whose face and body is covered by a dark cloth. Incorrect people claim the cloth is dark or black because the mother/baby holder is mourning the infant they're holding.
Yeah, you know, I know that's like a thing, but I don't think they usually cover their entire body.
The cloth is dark, so it doesn't show up so obviously in the final photo.
Yeah, yeah, because they usually, like, cut it in so that you can't really see the outline of the mom.
Exactly. Yeah. She is usually at least partly cropped out.
And you'll notice that this is also a technique used for kids that are young enough to, like, need the presence of their mother to be soothed. The mother, like, usually the kids are on their own by the time they're toddlers and understand the concept that mom's not gone forever if she's not actively touching you.
They're trying to get a photo of just the kid. But the kids must keep still for a long exposure. It is easier for the kid to keep still if they are held by their mother. The whole reason the mother is in the photo, while hiding, is because the child is alive and might move. Hidden mother photographs are not post-mortem photographs.
No, no.
Number 4, weird eyes.
I'm curious, this happens in a lot of photos from that time period, just in general. Is it an exposure thing?
You may have missed this fun fact, but 19th century cameras had longer exposure times than modern cameras.
I had. I'm really glad you mentioned it.
Eyes held naturally open for seeing look different from eyes deliberately held open without blinking for extended periods of time.
You don't say.
The visual gag of you bugging your eyes out at me is lost to our listeners, but I appreciate it.
Listen,
regardless.
It doesn't always have to be for them. It can be just for us.
We won't even release this episode. It's just for
us. It's mine. It's mine and mine alone.
Oh, man. Also, fun fact, blue eyes in particular may show up white in old black and white photographic process.
Well, yeah, because they're not very sensitive when they're leveling the levels, are they?
And also, blue eyes exist because of a lack of melanin, so yeah, no pigment is going to show up as no pigment.
And also, it's not like every photographer was Man Ray, for Christ's sake. Like, some of them were just bad at doing it. Some of them were plain old bad pictures.
Now. I do have a note here that says, my eyes are painted on, yay.
Oh, a lot of people did paint in the eyes, yeah.
Because some eyes in 19th century photographs look weird because the photographer has painted them on after the fact.
Oh, I love those, by the way. They are phenomenal. Oh my god.
But why was this done?
Because eyes are a tiny detail that were often lost in the development process. That was often very difficult, given the volatile nature of the chemicals used to develop.
The end.
Wait, am I right?
I mean, yes, but I also have other notes.
Cool.
Here are some fun facts about eyes.
Oh, they're juicy. Is that one?
Eyes close for reasons other than death.
I refuse to believe it.
Blinking is a thing that alive people do.
No, I've never done it.
15 to 20 times per minute on average.
Really? That many?
Try holding your eyes open for 5 to 8 seconds. While looking as natural as possible.
I think I look pretty natural.
You look like you're flashing back to the war, if I'm being totally honest.
I was thinking about Claire's.
So you were just dissociating.
Yeah. Honestly, for me, that actually is a fairly natural expression.
Jesus Christ.
Just the haunting middle distance of the JoJo Siwa section of Claire's.
Even today's near-instantaneous shutter speeds still occasionally catch people mid-blink.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 19th century, a great deal of time passed between taking a photo and developing the image, comparatively speaking. Photographer probably wouldn't know a subject had blinked until hours, days, or even weeks after the photo session.
True.
Retaking the photo is not always feasible. So the photographer might just paint the eyes open because that's way easier.
It's so creepy, though. Oh my god.
Also, you will probably find references to the phrase, eyes painted open, or photographer painting over eyelids. This refers to the photograph being touched up by the photographer during or after the development process. It does not refer to the physical eyelids of a corpse being painted on by a photographer prior to postmortem photograph.
Which is wild, because if they had done that, it would be abundantly clear in the photo.
There has been some confusion. I just wanted to clear that up.
Have you ever seen a photo before?
No.
Neither have I. I wish someone would invent a goddamn camera.
I wish there was some kind of device I could keep in my pocket at all times capable of capturing an image based on reflections of radiation.
I know. That would be dope, but it doesn't exist. Next fact.
Why do the lies persist?
Well, the lies persist because parts of it are true, which is the easiest thing to lie about, is massaging the facts of a real thing.
Damn, bro.
Yeah, it's not like deep. Just fucking stop it.
Fucking galaxy brain over here.
Like, no, I was just saying,
like,
right?
What is truth? Am I right?
Like, the truth is truth. And, like, if you dedicate some time to it, you could figure it out. Like, obviously, you've done the, you've walked the walk, and now you know that there's a difference.
Number one, the lies make a good listicle.
They sure do, though. God.
People love a good story about creepy Victorians. As Christian Harding, owner of the Belfry Oddities store in Seattle, quoted in Atlas Obscura, the same thing happened with postmortems that did with tear catchers. People want to create a fake history and to believe it. For more on that, see our tear catchers episode. And when it comes to listicles, the more visual aids, the better. So now you have a story about creepy Victorians that is almost 90% images. This is internet gold.
Yeah.
Speaking of gold, number two, money, money, money.
Oh, money, money, money.
A random 19th century photo. $2 to $5 if you're lucky. A random 19th century photo plus a caption claiming the subject was totally dead at the time? Instant hundo.
Sometimes I actually go on eBay just to see what photo someone's claiming is of a dead person.
Yep. There is one particular photo that gets passed around of a young man resting his head in his hand as he looked into the camera. This is oft-touted as a postmortem photograph. It is actually Lewis Carroll, photographed as a young man prior to writing Alice in Wonderland and very much alive.
Are you telling me Lewis Carroll wrote Alice in Wonderland when he was dead? Damn, what a king. He had died before he wrote that book.
Oh my god. All this time we were knocking on him for failing to understand new math, and really he was just trying to describe the afterlife from beyond the veil.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Exactly. It's like Contact, but not that at all. Because I lost the metaphor.
The situation is not helped by the film A Haunting in Connecticut.
Oh, well, Haunting in Connecticut covers a bunch of different stuff, though.
It does. But what they did with postmodern photographs is create a bunch of fakes for the production.
Well, yeah, yeah. I hate that movie, by the way. It's such a wretched movie on every front.
The filmmakers used fake photographs instead of real photographs to avoid having to pay any potential descendants of the actual photograph subjects.
Now that's galaxy brain. What, someone might recognize Grandpa and I'm not going to bother.
But now photos from that film are circulating amidst other photographs of super alive people misrepresented as postmortems.
Oh, that film destroyed, like, the entire market for people who do, what is it, ectoplasm photos?
Really?
I mean, which were fake at the time. Well, you know, we should probably do an episode on that. But, like, after this, they made some really good digital manipulations of fake ectoplasm photos. Like, it's over. You're never gonna find real ones anymore.
Real fakes.
Well, okay, but it's a genuine fabrication from the Victorian era.
Teal deer.
Can I get a photo of one?
God, if only. Victorian postmortem photography was a real phenomenon. However, at some point, the true statement of people in the 19th century sometimes took photo portraits of dead people morphed into everyone ever photographed in the 19th century was secretly dead the whole time.
Yes, often without their own knowledge.
If someone in a 19th century photograph is dead, it is usually pretty obvious from funerary accoutrement and context. They will not be standing without very obvious industrial-grade support. If someone in a 19th century photograph looks alive, is looking at the camera, and is standing up or otherwise assuming an unlikely pose for a corpse, they're alive. Most images identified as postmortem photography online are in fact pictures of alive people. Please do your research before purchasing. Thank you.
Well, okay. All right. I do have a question, and I was wondering if you have, like, any kind of answer for it.
Let's go.
How do you make sense of, like, those gray areas? Because I have seen veracity called into question on photos of, like, people slumped over on couches, where it's really hard to tell if they fell asleep or if they are, in fact, dead. Like, you know what I mean? There are photos that don't look right, but the skeptical mind doesn't want to cut immediately to, that's dead.
My default is alive.
Okay.
Usually, if people were photographing a corpse, they were either trying to make it look alive and failing, or not at all disguising the fact that it was a corpse.
I think that everyone gets caught up in the idea of trying to make it look alive and failing, because that scope has so much possibility that when you see these gray areas, you want to believe.
True. But Dr. Minovici was the absolute best at making corpses look alive, and he had to turn people into pincushions to make that happen.
Yeah.
And he was the only one really capable of doing it. He was the best and it was ghoulish. And everyone else trying to imitate him was not less ghoulish.
I will say.
In terms of result.
Yeah. I will say that I have never owned or directly handled one that was not. Okay, I actually do have one, like, wicked fucking gray area one.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like it. But I don't think I've ever owned or handled one that was not very explicitly funerary. I did have one in a chair, but there were flowers, and they weren't really masking the gawping mouth or any of the slackness that they couldn't prevent.
Yes.
So, yeah, I will. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the most common, and I think it's your safest bet. I do have a photograph of a child that I have no idea what to make of it.
I'm also personally very skeptical of photos of children who don't look alive, because there is a photo of me as a child. And this may come as a shock, but I'm still alive.
Mm.
Much to my chagrin.
I'd like a little more evidence, but...
But there's a photo of my sister and I seated on a chair. We're both dressed in our Sunday best. She's about 7. I'm about, like... 3, and it looks like she is holding a extremely ghoulish porcelain doll.
Yeah.
But it's me, and I'm very much alive.
Well, I'm not saying it's guaranteed a post- I have to bust it out sometime, because here's the thing, whatever it ends up being, it's probably the most unsettling photo I've ever owned. Like, it's a bad photo in every way, to the point where my mind was actually like, is it even possible, like, is this kid even alive for this to be as scary looking as it is?
I'm gonna have to show you the photo of me sometime, because it is, like, it's me and I'm unnerved.
yeah, but I remember I was on eBay looking for postmortems, and I did find one where the seller was saying, like, possibly postmortem photography, and it was a sleeping child, obviously very limp. You know, kids do tend to go dead weight when they're asleep.
Yeah,
and the mother was holding it and smiling, and I was like, what the fuck do you think?
Also, like, people like, oh, the kid's limp, it's dead. It's just like, no, babies move less when they're asleep. It's much easier to get a photograph of a sleeping baby than, like, a wriggling baby or a crying baby.
Well, it's like, its context is really important, because you might not be wrong. Like, a portrait of a baby is conspicuously covered in flowers and in a bassinet. Admittedly, a lot of the ones where they're set up in cribs to be sleeping, those can look pretty natural. Because they tend to be taken pretty quickly after death. So I get that you might be like, oh, every sleeping baby is dead, but there's a level of staging that you'll immediately recognize, I think, once you get into the hang of it.
Also, if you know, like, Victorian flower code, you can see, oh, hey, lilies.
Yeah. But context is also important, because if a woman is smiling and holding an infant, I'm going to go ahead and take a wild guess that it's just asleep, and this is a nice portrait of her and her baby. No, I don't know a lot of grieving mothers who smile about it.
Plot twist. Baby's alive. She's dead.
Oh, ghost. Super ghost.
Sources for this episode include...
BuzzFeed?
No. OrderOfTheGoodDeath.com's article, The Unpleasant Duty, An Introduction to Postmortem Photography by Kelly Christian.
Ooh, Order of the Good Death is great. Great resource.
Metro.co.uk article, I Love Victorian Postmortem Photography and Here's Why You Should Give It a Chance by Violet Fenn. SkepticInc.com had an exhaustive and delightfully irate article titled Myths of Victorian Postmortem Photography by Edward Clint. HauntedOhioBooks.com had an extremely informative article, Dead Man Standing by Chris Woodyard. MorningPortraits.blogspot.com had the all-caps article Hoaxes, Scams, and eBay Optimism. And AtlasObscura.com had Clearing Up Some Myths About Victorian Postmortem Photography by Sonia Vitomsky.
Fantastic.
Beautiful. The end.
It's over.
We were dead the whole time.
Ooh.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And you know what else will be dead? The turkey.
Ooh.
Apologies to vegans.
Oh, man. If you would like to yell about Victorian postmodern photography and other antique subjects, you can email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can hit up our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
And if you have photos that you're not sure if they're postmortem or not, post them up and we'll give you our opinion. Or just laugh at it, because it's probably silly. Unless they're dead, in which case we will be very respectful.
If you feel we've grossly mishandled this subject, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast. 5 stars.
If you want me to Photoshop a fun party hat on your post-mortem photography, also contact us at the email previously mentioned.
If you would like to purchase some vintage goods or a sticker or t-shirt with the podcast logo on it, check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
Actually, should I put a... Maybe I'll sell that incredibly unnerving photo of a child I own.
Maybe. If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, you should check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you are there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month and contribute towards getting us to releasing bonus episodes such as Dee shrieking about Haunting in Connecticut.
I hate that movie.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing those bonus episodes.
We love you.
Very much. And thank you in particular for listening.
Especially you.
Goodbye.
Bye.